The following podcast is part of the MindBodySpirit.fm podcast network.
Hello and welcome to the Radiate Wellness podcast with your host, metaphysician, Reiki master, and hypnotherapist, Christy Clemens Hoffman. Each week, we will discover teachings, tips, and tools to radiate your best life ever with practitioners, authors, and luminaries to help you on your path. Wellness, joy, peace, abundance. What do you want to radiate?
Hello and welcome back to the Radiate Wellness Podcast. Today we radiate self-awareness with Peter Canova, spiritual philosopher, linguist, historian, and author of the award-winning First Souls Trilogy spiritual fiction series, who approaches the multiverse theory through the twin lenses of quantum physics and ancient spiritual wisdom in his latest nonfiction book, Quantum Spirituality. Fascinating subject. Hi, Peter. Thank you for joining me today.
Been nice to be with you.
Yeah. So this new book, Quantum Spirituality, I mean, isn't spirituality automatically quantum?
Well, it depends on who you're talking to. I think that eventually people come to a realization, or some people come to a realization, that the nexus between the quantum and the spiritual worlds really have to do with the nature of light, matter, and energy. That's what both of them are really all about, ultimately. If you look at the ancient spiritual texts, essentially, they're describing the creation of the world and the consciousness that was behind that creation as an energetic source of intelligent light. And really, that's the whole nature of quantum physics. What quantum really means was it started off as the study of light with Max Planck in the year 1900. And quanta are simply units of light. Photons are units of light. And really, all of reality is based on light. If we didn't have light, there would be no perception of reality. It's the photons of light that reflect off of the things that we believe to be 3D objects in space that allow us to perceive them. So really, that's kind of where I think quantum physics and spirituality meet, is over those topics: light, matter, and energy.
You're so speaking my language. So this book deals with spirituality, science, Gnostic mysticism, and connecting with source consciousness, as well as the multiverse theory. Just so that we're all on the same page, can you explain where you are coming from with the multiverse theory?
Well, to me, it's very obvious on a fundamental level that there are other dimensions of existence. And the reason I say that is because the whole thing that led me from being a businessman into being on shows like yours and writing books like I write are the experiences I had with higher consciousness and sources of information that proved to be very valid and useful in what we perceive as our three-dimensional reality. So for me, it's a personal thing. On a more abstract level, I think that if you look at the ancient texts, particularly the Gnostic texts, they describe a series of essentially parallel universes that are dimensions of existence that aren't so much spaces, that we shouldn't think of them necessarily as spaces, but as levels of vibration, as levels of consciousness. Because reality really, when you really want to come right down to it, is a giant mind construct. And there are different frequencies or vibrational levels of that one universal mind. And those different vibrating frequencies are what create separate dimensions of existence. So this was very obvious in the Gnostic texts and also in many other ancient spiritual texts. And of course, we know in quantum physics, they're now really starting to understand our dimension as one of a number of dimensions that are existing parallel, side by side. They call them parallel dimensions, another word for it. Different theories like string theory posit that there are 10 or 11 different dimensions, of which ours is part of that. And we are interdependent with those dimensions. Without those dimensions of existence, we wouldn't exist either. So there are different vibratory levels to existence. And it all has to do with mind and frequencies and what we perceive as sort of the one and only reality. It really isn't that way. It's really the subject of other dimensions that preceded ours.
Yes, fascinating. So this idea of the existence of parallel universes came around like in the 1800s. Can you talk a bit about how that began or where it came from?
Well, I mean, really, it was way before the 1800s. It was really thousands of years ago, if you want to go back, like I say, to the Gnostics, who essentially were describing parallel universes in non-technical terms, because obviously they didn't have the scientific instrumentation that we have today. So they had to use different types of terminology and state these things in the forms of myths or creation narratives, however you want to characterize them. In modern times, I would say it was a little bit later that people started looking at the idea of parallel universes, more like in the 1950s, that really started to gain some traction in the world of quantum physics.
Right. So really, when we're talking about these parallel universes and these multiverses, it really means that our reality is a cosmic holographic movie, in other words.
It is, exactly. And they started to theorize the whole idea that we're living in a simulated reality really back in the 50s, when they started to try and explain phenomena like quantum entanglement. So quantum entanglement is the phenomenon that subatomic particles can communicate with one another over vast distances instantaneously. I mean, the equivalent of, let's say, millions of light years apart, that would be like, well, let me make it more intelligible. Say there's a version of you here on Earth and a version of you on Mars, and I pinch the version on Earth and the version on Mars says, ouch, at the exact same instant. So how does that happen? Well, they don't have fiber optics that are connecting them, or they don't have a tin can and a string, you know, between them to communicate. So people were trying to understand, well, how does that happen? And it happens faster than the speed of light, which really shouldn't be. They say nothing moves faster than the speed of light, except for thought. And some people, like David Bohm and others, started to say, well, wait a minute, what if our universe is really something more like a hologram? And we're just looking at the same thing from different aspects, because the characteristic of a hologram is that each little bit of the hologram contains the whole, contains the image of the whole. So if you slice and dice a hologram into little tiny pieces, each of those little tiny pieces contains the image of the entire hologram. So he started to ponder whether or not maybe our universe is really kind of like a giant hologram. And that's how this apparent instantaneous connection between the different parts can happen like that. Well, we had some further indication of the development of the holographic universe theory, or the simulated universe theory, when they started studying black holes. And what they found out about black holes was that black holes have what's called an event horizon. And outside of the event horizon is what we call like normal space. Inside the event horizon, nobody knows what's there. But what makes up a black hole is everything that's inside the event horizon. And it's the information, and this gets a little, almost gets off into another subject, which I'm going to try to avoid to do, to get off into a big tangent, but it has to do with information. And scientists are now understanding that information is something very tangible. It's not some abstract thing. Information actually is encoded in particles, and it's kind of like the DNA of the universe. And it makes everything that we perceive perceptible. So you would think that the information that constitutes a black hole would be inside the volume of the black hole. Lo and behold, that's not the case. It's outside on the surface of the black hole in the event horizon, and it's projected inside the black hole to form the reality of the black hole. Now, that's abstract, so let me get concrete with this. Let's imagine we have a bucket. Okay. And inside the bucket is our universe, the Earth and everything else. All the comings and goings of humanity are all inside this bucket of the universe. Now, you would think that the reality is what happens inside the bucket. But what the studies of black holes are saying is, no, the reality is not inside the bucket. It's outside on the skin of the bucket. It's on the outside of the bucket in a two-dimensional form that's projected in as a three-dimensional reality. So this is kind of mind-blowing and counterintuitive, but that seems to be the way the world operates. So this discovery that they made of black holes and the fact that the universe may be, you know, in essence, a three-dimensional projection furthered this whole idea of the holographic universe and the notion that we may be living in some kind of a simulated reality.
Wow. This is amazing. You know, it strikes me that all of this is pretty much out in the open anymore. Star Trek, the movie Sliding Doors with Gwyneth Paltrow, The Matrix. This stuff should be more mainstream.
Well, if you think of, you mentioned Star Trek, a very interesting analogy I often use is that in one of the Star Trek franchise TV series, I think it was Next Generation, they had something called a holodeck.
Yeah.
And they'd go there for recreation. And the holodeck, really, it was an immersed virtual reality. It was so real that the crew could actually interact with the creations inside the holodeck. And that's essentially kind of an analog to what we are. We are the programmers who immersed ourselves into our own creations and kind of forgot we were the programmers. So, I mean, that's one way to look at it, because when I mentioned the fact that the entire fabric of reality is a mind construct, there is a one single undivided consciousness that has projected everything, but it has projected itself into different parts. And, you know, kind of like relay stations, in effect, if you look at an electrical power grid, you have the source and then you have the relay stations that allow the source to project itself out and become usable electricity for various uses. Well, we're kind of like those relay stations that were projected out into different dimensions of creation in order to experience creation in its full totality.
Wow. So why did you write this book? Why was the time now for this?
I don't want to take too much of your time, but I would like to ask you a few simple favors. First of all, please rate, review, and share this podcast wherever you're listening. You know, it sounds like a simple little thing, and it is, but it has a huge impact for us because it helps other people find us in the podcasting algorithms. I don't know how it works, but I do know that it helps a lot. Next, if you would subscribe or follow wherever you're listening, whether that's YouTube or Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Pandora, Spotify, wherever you're listening, just hit subscribe or follow, and that helps you and it helps us. It helps you because then you receive notifications when we have a new episode that's out. It helps us because, again, algorithm magic, I don't know what happens. But it helps. And then finally, you can support our podcast in a tangible way by going to radiatewellnesscommunity.com/podcast and then click on support the show. Now, we have a new feature too. We are now on Patreon. You can find us on Patreon. You can also find the link to Patreon when you go to radiatewellnesscommunity.com/podcast. So on Patreon, for $3 a month or $5 a month, you can support your metaphysical and spiritual growth. You can learn about upcoming guests, and you can get early and ad-free versions of the shows. So please support us. This podcast is free for you to listen, but we have costs, and quite frankly, they come out of my pocket. So if you like this content, if you get a lot out of it, please see what you can do to give back. Thank you so much.
Well, you know, it started off like this. The genesis of this whole thing was that when I was in my 20s, I had some very vivid experiences. I found out that I was a very accurate medical intuitive. And then once I got the disbelief of that aside, it opened up a whole floodgate of phenomena, remote viewing, psychometry, clairvoyance, clairaudience. And I started getting information from somewhere. And I wrote a series of books that became like a cult hit called The First Souls Trilogy, about the first spirit consciousness to incarnate in the material world. And it traces their lives over different critical epochs of history. And it became a 25-time award-winning series, including Best Book Series from Indie Next Generation. And Quantum Spirituality, the book we're talking about today, was my first nonfiction book. And it was all the 35 or 40 years of research that I accumulated with ancient spirituality and quantum physics that led to the creation of the fictional series. So I decided, okay, you know, it's out there in kind of an entertaining and subtle form. Why don't, you know, maybe the time is now to make it more pointed and a little bit more, you know, didactic. And I decided to compile all the research I've done into this book in order to be kind of like a handbook of knowledge to help people on their own spiritual journey to gain their own experiences with higher consciousness.
So how can each of us harness this power of the quantum spirituality to transform our world on both an individual and a collective level?
Well, these experiences of consciousness come to different people in different ways. With me, it was almost like a spontaneous happening. I didn't really quite expect it. For a lot of people, perhaps for most people, they have to kind of hit the bottom of the barrel or have some impetus in their life to start seeking. Because if you're going to stay wrapped up in the everyday world, in your job, your family, your automobiles, whatever, and you don't really give any thought to these things, then you're not going to really experience very much. But if you do have a genuine desire in order to understand if there's something else out there other than what we perceive, that's the first step, is having that desire. So I can't create desire in other people. All I can do is indicate by personal example and by the knowledge that I put in there that there is something out there at the end of the rainbow. So if you want to take the time to look at it, I'm giving you not just a lot of sort of spiritual aphorisms, but I'm giving you scientific facts that form sort of the X and Y axis, you know, like it's a roadmap for people on a higher journey of consciousness. And like any other map, you have to have at least two coordinates. You need latitude and longitude, or north and south, in order to make sense of anything. Well, my coordinates are quantum science and ancient spiritual wisdom. And I merge these with other disciplines like psychology and other different types of disciplines to approach the whole subject from a multidimensional standpoint, since we're talking about dimensions. And that connecting those dots really creates a powerful arena of knowledge to orient people. But from that point on, it's really up to them. You have to have your own meditative practice. You have to have your own way of really delving into these things to use this knowledge, because all I can do is be a signpost. I can't be the end of the journey. The end of the journey is up to each individual person. All I can do is create some signposts and provide a little bit of a roadmap to help make sense of things, to let people know, okay, there's something else out there. Now let me go ahead and pursue it. That's really what this book does. It's a real wealth of knowledge that connects a lot of dots and creates a very powerful impression on people that, you know, there's something worth for me studying here to really learn and pursue.
So how did you approach your research, and where did you go to research this?
Well, it started off researching the Gnostics, who were the ancient Judeo-Christian mystical sect that was suppressed by the Roman Church. And it started with reading them, and it kind of blew my mind how scientific they were in their approach to things. And then I started reading quantum physics, and I started seeing these incredible parallels between quantum physics and what the ancient Gnostics were saying, to the extent that I showed in the book how the Gnostics predicted things like parallel universes, the holographic universe, the Big Bang, the God particle. Most major modern theories of quantum physics were actually, the Gnostics got there first. Even Carl Jung, the famous depth psychologist, when he found out about the Gnostics and read their texts, he said, "Finally, I've found people who understand me. It's like they got there before I did." So the Gnostics were people who were masters who went over to the other side. And like most shamanic traditions, they brought back information from the other side, which could be used to be helpful, to be healing, to be instructive at our level of consciousness.
Wow. So how can we understand what this consciousness is and what its source is?
Well, there's different levels of understanding. I mean, you can sit here and listen to me and you can gain intellectual understanding, which is fine. It could be a good first step, but it's not where you want to stop. Where you want to stop is actually experiencing this consciousness. And this is where I'm trying to help people to get to by giving them some tools, information. But again, it boils down, and there's several chapters in the book that discover, that talk about how people can utilize this in their own meditative practices, and helpful guides to meditation and to get into a meditative state where you can still your mind and let the impressions from these other sources of information or dimensions come through. So there's two types of knowledge. What I'm talking to you about right now is imparting a certain type of knowledge. Like if you read a book or if you listen to an audio, that's factual knowledge. But there's a different higher level of knowledge called experiential knowledge, which is what the Gnostics were all about. And the best way I can describe that to you is I can sit here and tell you that fire burns, but you don't know the truth of that until you put your hand in the fire. And then once you do that, you own it. Okay, you know that that's a reality. So it's the same thing with what we're talking about here. Once you get to that level where you start to begin to get this information from the other side, you start to understand better the source of things. Now, ultimately, can we know God ultimately, or the ultimate secret nature of the source? The Gnostics didn't think so, because They said that there was a hidden aspect to God, but there was also an immanent aspect to God, an aspect that made itself more understandable. And I won't say creations, but to its projections, okay? Because in the Judeo-Christian tradition, as human beings, kind of these lowly creations that were made by a separate entity, a separate God out of the dust of the earth, and we were breathed life into us, kind of wound us up like these little dolls and put us down in this insane asylum, bouncing around here, trying to figure out what to do. But there's a difference between creation and emanation. In the Gnostic view of things, God created nothing. God or the supreme consciousness. Incidentally, you can call it by many different names. You can call it God, the one, the source, the supreme consciousness. The names don't matter. It's all the same thing. I will call it the source. The source did not create anything. The source projected everything. The source literally projected its own consciousness out in diluted forms in order to experience reality from different perspectives, from different levels of vibration, whatever. So that's why we, in a way, you could say we are the source, but in a very diluted, limited state. And limitation is necessary in order to create differentiation and the whole feeling of individuality. Because if you had the consciousness of the source, you wouldn't be an individual. You'd be absorbed back into the source. But with your limited perspective, we can think of ourselves as separate beings and have the perception of separate experiences and so forth. So it's kind of a little bit like a smoke and mirrors game in some ways, that the source is playing with itself in order to understand itself in different states of experience.
Wow. How did you get interested in all of this? I mean, what was your background before you started writing?
My background was, I'm a businessman and still am an international businessman. And after I had the experiences that I told you about beginning in my 20s, I just had, you know, it was increasingly an urge to increasingly examine these things. And, you know, I guess I'm a Capricorn, so I wasn't just satisfied to have the experience. I wanted to understand the nuts and bolts behind the experiences that I was having. So I embarked on a kind of lifelong study of these issues of spirituality and quantum physics.
I see. So you didn't grow up being like some sort of mystic or curious about these type of things?
Not until I was in my 20s. I started experiencing stuff that many people thought was out there. Best way I can put it.
Anything you'd like to share?
Well, the experiences I had, of course, I was a medical intuitive, so I helped people in that regard, which I don't do that anymore for a variety of reasons. But the whole way that I started from scratch and literally wrote without any tutelage, wrote a successful 25-time award-winning book series was channeled information. Sometimes I didn't even feel like I wrote my own books because these things were coming to me. There were other instances where this saved my life. I was in Africa and I had premonitions about some things that were going to happen, and they did. And unfortunately, some people perished in those, and I didn't because I kept my distance from it. But it manifests itself in just a lot of different ways.
Fascinating. Now, I see from your materials that you are a linguist. Now, I think that is fascinating. So to what extent do you practice linguistics, and how does that inform what you do?
Well, I wouldn't really call myself a formal linguist in terms of having, you know, an educational background in linguistics. I have an ear for languages, and I speak several languages, including Greek, and I was able to read these Gnostic texts in the original Greek. So I guess it would be more accurate to say that I have an affinity for languages and what they mean. And I was also, for instance, fascinated with Tolkien's works, The Lord of the Rings and so forth, because honestly, they really developed out of Tolkien's fascination with linguistics and the various languages that he invented, Elvish and so forth and so on. So language is an expression of the minds of the people that speak it. And different languages will have a different vibration to it. For instance, ancient Greek was an extraordinarily precise language. I mean, they had numerous words for the same things that we might only have one or two words for, because what they were doing was they were describing the different textures and nuances and things. So I think, like I say, it would be really more accurate to say that I just have an affinity for languages and an understanding of what language actually represents.
You know, I do quantum healing hypnosis technique, QHHT, Dolores Cannon stuff, that lady. And it has come up in multiple sessions, the importance of language and how it forms our idea of consciousness and how it informs like what we think of things and how what we think informs and changes our language. It's fascinating stuff, with language just being a representative idea
of what the concept is.
Which is, I'll tell you, which is why I'm very concerned about some things that are happening in our modern society, political correctness and the attempt to change language around. These are politically motivated ways to change, it literally brainwash people, because if you start to control the way they talk, you control the way they think. And I find this very dangerous to a free society and free thinking. I mean, this whole thing we're going through now with cancel culture, political correctness, it's very puritanical and very inhibiting. Comedians can't go on college campuses anymore and do their acts because somebody is going to be offended because we used language that was inappropriate. People need to be able to express themselves freely and, you know, without thought control that's imposed by any one particular group. And I mean, this kind of goes back to really to Red China, to Mao Zedong, when, you know, essentially he was trying to control the youth of China through his little red book and what he called correct thinking. And he came up with a whole vocabulary in that book to demonstrate what correct thinking was. And the result was the Cultural Revolution, which was a terrible history in China, violent and terrible history in China. So I really caution people to be aware of being manipulated by people who are trying to change your language and trying to change your thoughts. Be your own person, be your own judge, and be your own free thinker.
Interesting. Very interesting. Yeah, I was curious about how you approach linguistics in this work. It's interesting. Is there anything that you'd like us to know, anything we haven't talked about that you think is important?
Well, there's a lot of things, but I think that ultimately, what I really would like to see people do is essentially become their own prophets, to have enough knowledge that they don't have to take anything on faith from somebody like me or anybody else, because they have developed their own intuition and made contact with this higher source of information to the point where they can make their own decisions. I think that's extremely important. I always say that prophets speak the heart of God, their followers start religions. The followers of the prophets are the ones who have the revelation. The followers, all they can do is interpret, because they really don't understand. And interpretation all of a sudden allows them to put their own agendas in there. And before you know it, you have corruption of the original message, the original revelation. That seems to be the story of religion. You know, you have the founders of the different religions. And I don't think they meant to found religions per se. I mean, I know, for instance, that Jesus, the original in Christianity, there was no such thing as Christianity. If you went back into biblical times and you talked to any of the followers of Jesus and said you're a Christian, they wouldn't know what you're talking about. They were followers of the way. Now, the way, just by its very title, you can tell was a spiritual practice, like yoga would be a spiritual practice. And what Jesus was really teaching, and incidentally, he had two teachings. One were the secret esoteric teachings, which became the Gnostics, and the other was the outer teachings for the masses, which became the Orthodox Catholic Church. But Jesus was teaching a way or a path to higher consciousness. And that, unfortunately, was lost when the Orthodox part of the church suppressed the mystical part of the church, which were the Gnostics, and replaced the mystical understandings with all the dogma and the hierarchy and all the stuff that we see in organized religion today.
Right. I mean, for that reason, I cannot call myself a Christian, although a big fan of Jesus. Now, you have a podcast as well, Quantum Spirituality on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Can you tell us about that?
That's correct. Yeah. Podcast of the same name as the book. And, you know, I talk about different topics of interest. Really, the main theme is consciousness and consciousness raising. But I also have the trilogy that I wrote, the First Souls trilogy. And I believe that there are different ways to reach people. And my first impulse was to do it in an entertaining kind of way. So the First Souls trilogy are really geopolitical spiritual thrillers, in effect. And they've won the books collectively have won 25 different national and international book awards. And we're working on making a TV series out of the first book, Pope Annalisa, which is about an African nun who becomes the first female pope at a time in the near future when America and Iran are going into a nuclear war. And it's a cliffhanger, a page turner, but there's also deep spiritual messages in there. And all the books are kind of the foundation platform of the books are the Gnostic and quantum science that we've been talking about today. So people can go to my website also, petercanova.com. That's P-E-T-E-R-C-A-N-O-V-A.com. There's a wealth of information on that site about what we've been talking about. There's videos, there's portals that describe the different books and things, and also a portal to the podcast, Quantum Spirituality.
And I'm looking at your website now, Pope Annalisa. This sounds so fascinating. So this whole idea of this show, this sounds wonderful. You've got a lot of stuff up here, don't you? This is fantastic. And we can contact you also through this website.
Yes.
Yeah, you've got a lot of really interesting stuff going on. I have to admit, I had not heard of your series, your book series, and now I really want to read it. It sounds fascinating. How did you get started with that?
Well, again, I started having these experiences in my 20s, and I was interested in writing, and I happened to go to a writer's conference or two, and at one conference, it was a screenwriter's conference, the instructor said, okay, I want you all to come in with an idea that nobody's ever done before. And that's pretty daunting because almost every work of fiction and film and everything is derivative of something else. But I started thinking, okay, so what hasn't the world seen before? And I said, well, you know, and I guess because of the fact that I was spiritually oriented, I said, well, they haven't seen a female pope. And then I started thinking, what would the world be like that would accept a female pope, or what would have to happen in order for a woman to rise like that in an institution that for 2,000 years has been had a death lock of by men on it. So I started playing that out in my mind, and I brought it to the instructor, and she loved it. She wanted to shop it around Hollywood. And I said, nah, I said, I don't want to do that, because I said, I want to flesh this thing out so I have a little bit more control over this. So I decided to go ahead and write a book, and then that led to, you know, a couple of other things. So it's actually written in reverse order because it's about the first souls to incarnate into material experience. And it's written in reverse order, kind of like Star Trek. So the first book is really the third book. The second book goes back to biblical times and the time of Jesus. And the first book is really the book of origins, where the souls first came into the earth plane. And they created this kind of Atlantis-like civilization, but eventually they became divided between those who fell into the illusion of materiality and those that retained a consciousness of their origin. And they end up having this, you know, tremendous civil war that destroys their civilization, but gives birth to modern civilizations like Egypt and Greece in the interim. So it's kind of a tour de force of spiritual history in entertaining form.
It does span a gamut. So sounds like a lot is in these books. That is fascinating. So, so interesting. So yeah, your podcast, your books, all the projects that you have coming up and going on, it can all be found at petercanova.com. That is so interesting. Well, is there anything else that we haven't talked about that you think is important?
No, I think we've covered a lot of ground. I don't want to confuse everybody with more information, but I think we covered probably quite a bit of ground.
I mean, this is a vast subject. It really is. When we're talking about the quantum and then we're talking about spirituality, we're combining the two. I mean, I really do think that you cannot have one without the other. So this whole debate of science versus religion, it's like, it doesn't make sense, but it is a lot to wrap your mind around. I agree.
Yeah. So, but like I say, I think that what I'm trying to do really is move people beyond simple faith and listening to other people, and getting immersing themselves onto a pathway where they can start to have these experiences and realizations firsthand. There is a whole nother world out there, that what we perceive as our reality is probably the bottom rung of the ladder. And there's other, and I believe, higher dimensions of information and existence out there. And just from a practical level, I mean, this can improve your life so much. It improves your performance as a human being, whether it's in business and your interpersonal relationships or whatever. It gives you like an edge up. And I always say to people, look, you have a choice. You can live down in the basement or you can live up in the penthouse. Well, if you live down in the basement, yeah, you'll survive and you'll go and you do the things we do. You'll eat, drink, you know, go to the movies, have relationships or whatever. But once you get up the penthouse, you get a much broader perspective of the panorama of life and you get a little bit more clued into what it's all about. And to that extent, you exert a greater measure of control over your own life. So a lot of it really is about feeling more in control of your life and navigating through this school, which can sometimes be the school of hard knocks down here. This is not an easy plane of existence, really, for most of anybody. We all have our challenges. And this can help you navigate those challenges in a more effective way. So it really comes down to something very practical. I don't want people to leave people thinking this is all about abstractions. What it really boils down to is having a way for you to live your life better.
I agree on the quantum level and on the spirituality level, but you know, combining them two is really where the magic happens. But it can greatly enhance our life when we realize how much more there is to what we're seeing and what we're experiencing. That is just the tip of the iceberg, really.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today. I've really appreciated our conversation, and I can't wait to read your series and finish reading Quantum Spirituality. I think it's going to be fascinating to finish that.
Good. Well, I hope you enjoy it. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much.
Radiate Wellness is an international community of holistic and alternative healers dedicated to helping you create spiritual, energetic, and physical well-being. To learn more about our practitioners, services, classes, and events, or to schedule an appointment, visit us at radiatewellnesscommunity.com.